Hello, I'm Jane Crowther, editor of Total Film, and welcome to Inside Total Film, the weekly podcast from the Smarter Movie Magazine. And today, it's 007 Heaven, with our deputy editor, Matt Matem.
Hello.
Our reviews editor, Matthew Leyland.
Hello.
Our news editor, Jordan Farley.
Hello.
And our online editor, Jack Shepherd.
Hi, Jane.
And our special guests, Daniel Craig, Lashana Lynch, Lea Seydoux, and Carrie Joji Fukunaga. Yes, they're all here with us. They're all zooming in from their loungers. They're not. We did them in a fancy hotel. It's fine. But this is a Bond special. This week, we're talking No Time to Die with chats with the director and stars of the 25th Bond film and our no spoiler review. So you'll find out if it's a Casino Royale or a Quantum of Solace. Before we get to that, though, shall we hear from Mr. Bond himself, Daniel Craig, and his new 00 colleague, Lashana Lynch. Jack, you sat down with him to talk Bond bowouts.
It was before we saw the movie, so we're unable to talk about spoilers. They're very good at avoiding them. But Dan, Yul, and Lashana kind of spoke about the future of Bond.
So my first question's for Lashana. You're a new 00 agent. Very exciting. What was the best piece of advice that Daniel gave you coming into the franchise?
She wouldn't listen anyway. What?
Diddly.
Diddly, absolutely diddly. Nothing.
Zilch. Good luck. Yeah, okay,
Over to you.
Exactly. I'll just sit here with me tea. There's so little time to actually talk. Yeah. Everyone's so busy. They're all departments working together.
Incredibly lucky to get Lashana. She didn't need advice. She just got on with it. She's a consummate, brilliant professional actor and just came in and knocked it out of the park.
I didn't say he said it.
Bond is so obviously so iconic, and he's always changed with the times, especially, you know, with Daniel, when you came in, you know, he was a more serious Bond. So I was just wondering, going forward, what would you like to see Bond as a character in a franchise kind of reflect? How would you like to see it reinvent itself going forward, perhaps?
I mean, I was given a chance, an incredible opportunity when I was given this role to do something different with it. And that I'll be forever grateful for. I wanted to bring it up to date in an obvious way, but to make it as relevant as possible. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, we make Bond movies. And Bond movies have all of these things that go on in them that are kind of tropes. And I wanted to subvert every single one of them. And I think we achieved that over the years. And with this one, we've gone even further. I've always said it, get the best we can. We can afford it. So get the best we can. And getting the best actors for the job is what it's about. And, you know, moving forward, thankfully, it's nothing to do with me. It's not my business. I try to leave it in a better place than where I found it, I thought. It should always get better. And I would hope for that's what happens in the future.
And Lashana, how do you feel like your character kind of brings the, in a similar sense, you know, that kind of spin of modernity and, yeah, make it reflecting on society today?
She's the woman who's right in the center of this change, this shift in consciousness, I think, that's happened throughout the world and my culture specifically. And she's a great example of the kind of women that I meet every day, the kind of women I grew up with as well, and who I would really love to be reflected on screen for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I would love for my future daughter to just see a character like Nomi as the norm. That would be my dream. And I actually think that's going to happen. This shift that the franchise has gone through, I've come in right, I guess, at the perfect time to say, look, this is an example. Everyone else, other franchises, other filmmakers lead by this example, because this is done so well that I think steering away from this kind of strength with these kinds of nuances would be a shame. So I'd like to see a continuation of this, which will be done in a franchise, but across the industry.
Jack, you also chatted to Dr. Swan, Lea Seydoux, about her return to the franchise.
When you first signed onto the role, did you know that you were going to be in two movies, or was the intention to be in one and then call it quits?
No, I absolutely didn't know, because I was sure that Spectre was Daniel's last James Bond.
You know, which elements of Manlin were you most excited to explore this time around?
This film felt very different from Spectre. And also, the character has evolved very much. For me, it feels like a new character, almost. The relationship between Bond and Madeleine is really the center of the film. And it will be very emotional for the audience.
If she was almost a different character, then how did your approach, like coming into the character, was your like research and how you were playing her very different then?
To be honest, when I did Spectre, we shot for 8 months. And I really had the time to rehearse and, you know, even like all the stunts and to really, you know, be in the mood of the film. And this time I had no time to rehearse. So I jumped on the film and it was the way it was. And I had to deal with that. Yeah, it felt different. Carrie Fukunaga is also has a different style from Sam Mendes. And this time my character was more like, I had like very strong emotional scenes. So I just had to, you know, let myself go.
You said you thought Spectre was Daniel's last movie, but then obviously this one very much was, you know, was there a different energy on set when you were kind of making this movie? Was this then a more fulfilling experience, perhaps, especially with your character so at the center?
We knew that it was Daniel's last film, so we really gave everything we could. He's been working with all those people for like 15 years. He knew the most of the crew. It was like a family. It is like a family. It was a bit sad, but at the same time, we really wanted to make like the best film we could.
And you chatted to the director, Kari Joji Fukunaga. Let's see if he gave any secrets away.
I kind of want to take us back to the beginning for the first question. And it's on the two approaches that you and Danny Boyle had to it, because I was reading that his approach was much more whimsical and tongue-in-cheek and that yours was much more serious. And so I was wondering if you agree with that. And yeah, what's your take on your approach?
When I first met on the project, I sat down with Barbara and Michael just to try to get a sense of what wasn't working in the previous version. And I don't know if you could classify it as being one genre one way or another. There was just, for whatever reason, the elements weren't coming together in a way that either party was happy. So my job really became sort of like trying to figure out how to put the pieces together, really as a helmer, I should say, of the material that they wanted to get from point A to point B. And I don't know if it was serious. I mean, there's definitely some humor in there, but it's definitely more grounded in the grittier side of Bond that we got to meet in Casino Royale. So I think it goes back more to Casino Royale than in any of the other four films.
When you're tasked with doing a movie like this, what's your entry point? Do you kind of start off by looking at the journey that Bond's going to go on, where you want him to end up, the villain, the message you're trying to do? What's the entry point there?
Well, I think especially because it wasn't me pitching the idea. It wasn't me coming with a preconceived notion of what it should be. It was a much more architectural approach, I think. There was kind of looking at all the different pieces as they might fit together and then trying to move them in a way, especially I'm talking specifically about the writing process, to put them in an arrangement that was intriguing as a sort of beginning, engrossing as a middle, and then satisfying by an end. So really trying to build upon all the pieces of information we're being given as a story, the characters that are being introduced, the characters from previous films that we're bringing back in to sort of tie up loose ends. You know, there's a lot of sort of weaving going on in this.
You said about Casino Royale and how that's kind of the movie you've picked on then. So how did you pick parts of those other movies that you wanted to take? And then how did you create something that felt, you know, original and different for Bond?
There wasn't necessarily a method to picking what I wanted. There was just sort of literally just writing down bullet points, whether it was in notes overnight that we come back together and sort of spitball together, or literally on a board and saying, I think this would be interesting, or I think this dynamic would be interesting, or this misinterpretation would be interesting, or misunderstanding, you know, where does that send us, you know, and then really just explore sometimes to a dead end and start over again. I would say, so, you know, if you want to talk about Casino, what I went to in Casino was Vesper Lynd. I was really interested in what about her captured Bond. You know, what was it about her intellect and her way of interacting in the world that he was interacting in? How were they good partners? How were they bad partners? You know, and then go from there.
does sound like then Madeline as a character, her relationship with Bond, at least from the sounds of it, would be the obvious thing to kind of tie the film together. Would you agree with that?
I think with Madeline Swann's character, which is introduced in Spectre, as much as her connection to Mr. White is established in secret rooms and L'Americaine and inevitably, you know, their departure at the end of Spectre as a couple, there's a lot about her we don't know. So in order to make that character someone that we care about, someone that we're on Bond's side with, understand why she may be the right one for him, we have to explore deeper. Yeah, that was an example of taking a character and trying to get a better sense of what makes her tick and what makes that dynamic, you know, in terms of a chemical reaction with Bond, exciting.
So going on from like the writing process to the directing process with this one, you know, Daniel Craig's been living with this character for so long. By some accounts, he can be quite a feisty fella. And so what was your relationship with him on set like? You know, when you kind of had a disagreement, was it kind of like an equally weighted kind of back and forth between you? What was that like?
I mean, I don't think we really had any disagreements on set. There was a lot of story time. It was more of like debates and playful ideas and like really... Like we would have these round tables, always a round table, I remember, whether it was in Eon or in the office at Pinewood, with be Barbara and Michael and Greg and Daniel and, you know, whoever else might be there, sometimes Phoebe, sometimes the people, and just like spitballing the issues we were facing and trying to hammer this thing into a shape that made sense logically. That was very important to me in terms of character rationale and plot logic, but also just to make it satisfying and surprising and impactful. There's various ways to go about achieving the same emotional result. Each method or pathway has its pluses and minuses. So that was the thing we were always kind of wrestling with, is what's going to be the most cinematic? What's going to be the most satisfying? You know, and what's too much? You know, what's pull back on that because it's too much?
Like, speaking of Daniel, you know, we've seen in a documentary that was recently released about, you know, how he was very emotional on his last day on set and things. Like, how was that for you? Do you kind of get caught up in that, or are you very much thinking like, I've still got to edit this thing?
Normally don't get caught up in it. I was actually caught off guard by the weight of it, even though, you know, getting to set that day, we were shooting Splits because we had some night scenes to pick up, and so it's kind of a midday arrival on set, and we were pretty organized. Like, we knew exactly the shots we wanted to get, and we certainly didn't want to be shooting until 4 a.m. for our last day of shooting. So John Mallett, the first AD, and I were kind of walking around with Lena Sandgren, the DP, the different places where we needed these sort of surgical shots, and talking about the order we'd shoot them in. You could just kind of feel around set this sort of weight, almost like in your stomach, a sadness kind of hanging over things. And then once you saw like Daniel's teaming coming in and like, you know, his makeup artist crying on the second to last setup, not even like the last take, you know, just feeling that people realizing it was slowly or very fast coming to an end. And then finally, when we did call a cut, you know, on that last shot, you know, watching Daniel's stunt double JC just break down completely and tears and snot, you know, just everyone, you know, just in tears. You kind of, because I feel like I was a late arrival. I only came on this film, you know, and there's people who have been here, not just for Daniel's run, but going back to Roger Moore, even some of the crew members. This is their life, you know, this is their life's work for a lot of people. And to have Daniel be departing, you know, 5 films out of 25. That's a big chunk of the history of Bond there coming to an end. It's a big feeling.
Do you feel like this movie then, with so much emotional weight behind it, Daniel's last film, do you think it puts a fresh reset on the series to kind of move forward from there then?
I mean, that's a tricky one. And I'm so glad it's not me that has to make that decision. There's a lot of opinions around the world on what Bond should be. A lot of them coming from people who aren't even Bond fans. It's not anything that I would want to have to make the call on.
You know, Bond is always, you know, he's always changed with the times. So, you know, you look at even things as silly as the space race, and you got Roger Moore going up in space. With Daniel Craig, though, it was very much a more serious Bond after 9/11. And so what would you like to see as, you know, a Bond fan? How would you like to see Bond changing and reflecting the world?
I mean, when you see the film finally, you'll understand why there are elements in this film that were definitely with the times, major elements. In terms of where the world is going, it doesn't look like it's going a more stable place, does it? There's plenty of need, I think, for characters whose moral compass is stronger than that of their own countries.
You've just said that, you know, at the time when it was first made, this was, you know, very timely. But then, because it has been delayed, it's hard not to talk about the delays. You know, has the timeliness of it changed then?
I'm really curious to have this conversation with people once they've seen the film, specifically because the conversation would be, what do you think the effect would have been had it come out at the moment it was supposed to come out, or now where it is coming out, the subject matter, you know, because it will be a conversation piece, inevitably.
It's going to be Safin with bioweapons or something, and everyone's going to be like, it was him who started this. I was reading that you kind of handed in the final cut in 2020. You know, we know that the movie's going to be 2 hours, 43 minutes. You know, it's lengthy for a big studio movie, especially in times when we hear about studios pushing for sub 2 hour runtimes in places. How did that evolve?
It feels like it's the right length to tell a story. In fact, there were cuts of the film that were just maybe like 5 minutes longer that I was like, there are pieces that I sort of missed, but they're not essential to the storytelling. But I don't think there's anything in there that could be cut. Everything is there that needs to be there.
Okay, so there was always the intention from the writing to here to have a much longer, I mean, it's the longest Bond film.
Yeah, maybe it's just the longest credit sequence though.
So many family members to thank. Looking at your own Bond experience, and what was the thing that you feel like you've added to Bond that is very much your stamp?
I wasn't trying to consciously put any stamp on it. I think there's an unconscious creative stamp in there that's just through the lens of my mind going to be baked into the way it's executed and put together. I think it's more of an overall feel than, say, a stylistic stamp, if that makes any sense.
What do you think that feel is?
I just mean that in terms of, like, if you watch my films, then there might be some consistency in that. It's like a cologne.
Let's say we look at kind of, you know, True Detective, Beast of No Nation, all these films. Do you then see a through line to your work? Is there like an aspect of characters that you're very interested in exploring, you know, whether it's toxic masculinity, that kind of thing? What's your take on that?
The orphan has always been kind of a theme. The outsider orphan, you know, who finds community, finds their tribe, so to speak. And I think that's probably why I was drawn to Bond in the first place, is here's somebody who's an orphan, who's always been an outsider and has operated like an outsider. And this is his character, his psychology is a result of that.
Yeah, I can totally see that, especially with Bond, who is, you know, he could be, I imagine, quite a daunting character to take on as well, just because that history there is so much. How did you compartmentalize it? Is it something that you've reflected on now and thought, wow, I've done Bond and I'm still talking about it 2 years after finishing this bloody movie? Or is it something that you kind of just took in your stride and it's just what it is?
Right now it's more the latter, but I would say, like, even just writing Bond is difficult, especially writing contemporary Bond. I think Daniel's Bond is incredibly hard to write because you don't fall back on the pun and the raised one eyebrow sort of moments. It's a far more no-nonsense character. So then finding the words for that Bond is and getting into the psychology, then however that's communicated, which is never direct, the subtext is not on the surface, is what I'm saying. It's a very hard character to write. It took a long time to try and figure out how to get to strike the right tone there.
If the contemporary Bond was a different Bond, say Connery or Moore or some or Lazenby or anyone, like, would you have taken on and wanted to be involved with that? Or do you think Daniel Craig was very much the Bond that you wanted to write for?
Those characters are products of their time. And I think that Daniel, where he took the franchise, say, from Pierce Brosnan in his last film to Casino Royale, was massively different. Aside from, like, the recognizable cars and character names, they're almost completely different franchises. It's a pretty big reinvention, actually. And I would say for me, as a cinema goer, when that film came out, it brought me back into the franchise. I am definitely a fan of this style of Bond.
So that's the chats about the film before we saw the film. Nobody saw this film until Tuesday night, when everybody saw it, including royalty and Judi Dench. I mean, even Judi Dench hadn't seen this film before they showed it to us. So are we ready to discuss it?
Yes.
Most definitely.
I mean, we've waited 2 years for this.
It feels like an actual lifetime ago, doesn't it? Because It was the first film that was delayed at the start of the pandemic. So it was so long ago, 18 months ago at this point. Feels like it's been a long road, but it's finally here.
Indeed. Okay, so let's get into it.
James, fate draws us back together. Now your enemy is my enemy.
His name is Seffin.
And what does he want?
Revenge. Me.
When her secret finds its way out, it'll be the death of you.
You can imagine why I've come back to play.
So this is No Time to Die, the review.
No time to spoil, of course.
No time to spoil. Spoilers. No spoilers in this one. We will be doing a spoiler special next week, so please go and see it so we can talk about all that stuff and that thing. And what happened there. But for now, do you want to set it up for us, Jordan? You were on set of this film. So you're like besties with Daniel Craig right now, aren't you? Tell us what happens in this final adventure for him.
Well, I don't know about besties with DC, but we do have a nice chat, which I'll tell you all about later. But yeah, this is the 25th Bond film, of course. Daniel Craig's fifth and final outing as Ian Fleming's 007. Only he's not 007 in this film, because when we meet him near the start of this film, he's retired. Mm-hmm. He's schlubbing it up in Jamaica, catching fish, wearing T-shirts that are a bit too short for him, and generally having a bit of a miserable time, it looks like, despite the fact he's in beautiful surroundings. And the reason he's retired is revealed in a very exciting and very long pre-credits title sequence where he is seemingly betrayed by the love of his life, Madeleine Swann, which leaves him, yeah, quite miserable and sad. So picking up 5 years later in Jamaica, Felix Leiter turns up on the scene and tells Bond that a scientist who's been meddling in all kind of nasty genetic weapons has been kidnapped by Spectre. And Bond, of course, is the only man for the job. And how could Bond resist a mission like that? So he's dragged back into a world of espionage and action and beautiful women and glamour. And it all kind of unfolds from there.
It does indeed. Obviously, we're not going to give any spoilers away. But Jordan and I went to the premiere at the Royal Albert Hall. And there was electricity in the room then as they all trooped out on stage. And Daniel Craig was like, I'm off. That's what he said to the audience. I'm off now. I'm done. So this is definitively him finished. Is it the final swan song that we've been waiting for? What did you think, Jordan? I mean, obviously you were on set, so this was always being talked about as the very, very final film.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, Craig spoke about Spectre being his last Bond film for quite a long time because he had a real rough ride on Spectre. He tore his knee, he broke his leg, he did pretty much everything bad you can do to a human body on that film. So you can sort of understand why he would want to leave it there. But Spectre itself was a bit of a letdown. I don't think anyone was wholly satisfied by that film, certainly not as Craig's last film. But returning here has been well worth it, I think, because this is a proper definitive end of an era Bond film in a way that I don't think we've actually seen from a Bond film before,
which is incredibly exciting.
It really is, yeah. It's been built from the ground up as a farewell to Daniel Craig's Bond, and I think on that level, it's incredibly successful. We're not going to go into spoilers at all in this, but I found the ending incredibly moving for a number of reasons. And a lot of that was just tied up with the emotions of Daniel Craig sort of being my Bond and growing up with him as Bond, and two of his Bond films being two of my favorite Bond films of all time. And just seeing this era come to a close was actually, yeah, resoundingly powerful for me. But I do have my issues, which I'm sure we'll move on to, but there was so much about this film I found quite exciting and enjoyable. Most notably, a couple of very early set pieces in Matera and Cuba. The Matera sequence is the pre-tile sequence, and it's so, so great. It's one of the best set pieces of the Craig era, I think. Incredibly thrilling. You see an Aston Martin DB5 racing around the streets of this Italian heritage city, which has, you know, one tiny road, and he's being chased by bikes, and there's that incredible bike stunt from the trailers, which you've probably already seen.
Yeah.
And The mini guns. And he's wearing
this cream suit, this cream corduroy suit, which, you know, I know people, you know, take great interest in what he wears, but apparently this is a massive departure. Bond has never worn a cream corduroy suit. So even the suit itself is announcing that this is, you know, you've never seen this before.
Yeah, Craig takes the fashion very seriously.
He does.
I know that he has a lot of say in how he looks in those films. And I thought for the most part, he looked pretty great. I know you had a few issues with his mask in Norway,
which we will get to.
sense for the climate, but I like, you know, it looked good. Yeah.
Did you check your BBC weather app before you set off, Mr. Bond? Because I don't think that's the cope for where you've gone. But anyway, I think we should start off with what is right with this. Matt, you reviewed this for us.
Yes.
You gave it a 4-star review.
I did indeed.
What are the 4 stars for before we get to what you've knocked one off for?
Well, yeah, I kind of agree with a lot of what Jordan's just said there. And I think, I mean, so much of it is for Daniel Craig in this film because, maybe it's just what you bring to the film, you know, but it feels like so much of it is just sort of almost like a victory lap for him in a way, sort of saying goodbye to him after this, you know, really enjoyable run he's had. And I've got to say, I think I would actually now say he is my favourite Bond as well. Like, obviously...
Who's he eclipsed? Who was your favourite?
Well, Connery. Like, I suppose Connery's like the OG and Connery arguably is still the coolest, but I just think Daniel Craig's just been able to kind of dig into the character that much more, and he's obviously so good at the action stuff. You know, this film does give him a chance to do some very good acting as well, which you know you don't always get in this sort of blockbuster. So I appreciated that. Yeah, like Jordan said, that probably is the best set piece, which is, you know, always a bit of a sort of shame when it comes right at the beginning. But there's lots of good action throughout this. There's also lots of little nods to Bond's cinematic history, which I enjoyed a lot as well. You know, it's kind of nicely done. I didn't think they overdid it, but I thought it was nicely judged really on that front. So enough to kind of, you know, make you smile and, you know, just to give something to those, you know, hardcore Bond fans, which there are obviously loads and loads out there, but without it being kind of impenetrable or without it just feeling like it was, you know, being lazy and just, you know, doing that.
I like the first half very much. Yeah, like everybody's been saying, the opening sequence is just terrific. It kind of goes places where we haven't seen an opening sequence go before. I thought for one point it was going to be completely radical and not do something that we usually have in a title sequence, but it does do it anyway. But yes, I thought that was just fantastic. And then I did feel it kind of gradually went downhill, but in a very kind of like a very slow descent.
Yes, not off a cliff, you know, but just diminishing returns, possibly.
A gradual gradient, like almost level.
Yeah, because it is 2.75 hours and I did feel excessive, especially in the middle stretch. I felt was could have been clipped a bit more. I liked it overall, but not as much as Skyfall or Casino Royale.
Oh, it's no Casino Royale. And I have to say, in that pre-title sequence, one of the things that irked me about it was a nod to Casino Royale that made me recall Casino Royale immediately and freshly and immediately compare this film throughout to it, which is like, I kind of wish you hadn't reminded me of that person because they are untouchable to me. They are the absolute best. And cast so, it did cast a shadow for me. But yeah, I did love that whole chase sequence and the whole idea of this wonderful place. I mean, they're going to get so many tourists going there, aren't they, off the back of this film? That was pure travel porn right there. Yeah. But it's a place where you go to sort of burn your secrets, burn your regrets, start afresh. That's the idea of this sort of festival that's going on whilst they're there. This is a burn it down Bond, isn't it? I mean, you know, Daniel Craig takes the Bond franchise and literally sets fire to it, which for me was so ballsy and bold. And I think it will not be everybody's cup of tea at all. But then isn't that quite refreshing that we're probably, you know, all going to have an opinion that's different on a Bond rather than go, it was good. Some people are going to loathe this, aren't they?
Yeah, I would imagine so, definitely. it felt to me like the big reference point for this film is Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Yeah.
It's a film that's referenced numerous times with musical cues and lines and everything. And, you know, even though that film's sort of been reappraised in the years since as one of the best Bond films, I think at the time people weren't super hot on Lazenby and they weren't super hot on that ending either. Like, it felt like quite shocking and so downbeat at the time. But now, that's generally considered one of the more adventurous and interesting choices throughout all of Bond history. And I think there's a reason that that film's referenced so heavily, because I think this film is taking its cues from that film in a way, which I thought was incredibly exciting and interesting, but is going to ruffle a few feathers in the long run. I think people are going to look back on this and go, they made some very exciting, interesting choices with this film.
As much as it is a sort of, bold film and, does take Bond in a slightly different direction, it does still very much play to the formula as well. So I think all the things that you basically want out of a Bond film, you still do get here. It's not like it's, you wouldn't go and say, well, I don't recognize this as a Bond film. I mean, it's just hugely very, very, very much a Bond film still. So I think, again, for me, anyone who sort of pays their money and gets a ticket for this, who, has enjoyed some of the previous Daniel Craig films, there's just plenty to enjoy here. It just does tick all those boxes that, like, the Bond films have to tick. And to me, as I sort of said in the review, that's, to me, like a blessing and a curse of Bond in a way, because it can never go that far outside the lines. But then at the same time, if that is what you want, you know what you're going to get, and it delivers, so it's...
Let's talk about those boxes then. We get lovely cars, including a nod to another film with another car, which is quite a nice little Easter egg. You get location. Yes. You get location. Where do we go with this? We go to Cuba.
Beautiful, Norway, Jamaica. Havana.
Lovely locations. And you get beautiful women. But we should talk about one of those beautiful women, because I think this is also a plus point. One of the Bond girls, which we traditionally used to call them in a sort of disparaging fashion, is Ana de Armas as this agent in Cuba that Bond is sort of stuck with, and he thinks she's going to be a bit useless. She's a standout in this for me. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought she was fabulous. I mean, she was great with Craig in Knives Out. They clearly have this chemistry. And this is well adapted here. It's these different roles, different characters. And yeah, she's just fantastic. I mean, she's not in it a great deal, but she really shines in her, brief moment. She really grabs it and just runs with it. And absolutely terrific.
It's a rare sort of blast of fun for these films, which obviously that's the one thing that perhaps you could say has defined the Craig era, that it's not always huge amounts of fun. But yeah, she really is sort of having a blast.
Yeah, she subverts that whole idea of a beautiful woman waiting for Mr. Bond at a bar in this beautiful dress, and is incredibly capable. And I love that about her. Let's talk about the other very important woman in this film. Obviously, the 00 that has sort of risen up the ranks and is now the new hotshot for M, Nomi. What did she bring to it? Did you like the fact that Bond now has a rival in MI5 and somebody who is there to sort of put him in his place? Stay in your lane, Bond, which apparently got cut from the trailer and wasn't in the film, I don't think. But that's her sort of role here. Did you like that, Jordan?
Yeah, I have to say I have slightly mixed feelings on Nomi. I thought Lashana Lynch was commanding with her performance. I really enjoyed what she was going for with this. I thought the writing let the character down a tiny bit. From the start, we can tell that she's every bit as capable, every bit as accomplished as Bond. You know, she's got to the same level as he did, seemingly like 20 years before he did or something. Like, she's so much younger than him. Like, she's so much more up on all new technology and things like this. But then at the same time, she just seems weirdly obsessed with him and weirdly deferential to him, where I wanted her to just not be bothered by him in a way. Like, it feels like her whole world revolves around Bond, which didn't feel right for the character. I get why it has to be like that for a Bond film, because Bond is the center of this universe, but I thought like that decision let that character down a tiny bit. And there's a moment kind of later on which is just incredibly sort of, it's meant to be a moment of respect,
but it doesn't play that way.
It just didn't feel right to me, which was a little bit disappointing, given that, I really liked what Lashana was doing just purely from a performance level, it felt like I would actually love to see more of her just outside of this specific dynamic with her and Bond, because she was a great character besides that.
That moment you're referencing should have played in reverse, really. I would have preferred it if they worked that in somehow at some point, because it did strike a slightly false note.
It was just a bit weird because, you know, she's a person who's clearly like risen through the ranks based on her merit and capability. It just felt like in a lot of the films, she was just on the back foot and just like constantly being put down by Bond, like for no real reason, like just very odd. But
being a bit upset about it as well, whereas I was hoping she'd just be like, whatever, you know, off you bob, you dinosaur, you know, like, I don't care what you have to say, because I'm like really cool and amazing and great with guns and just like on it. And I'm besties with Moneypenny. So, you know, you've not even got that. I did like the sort of dynamic between the two women there, but it really highlighted when you see Nomi in the office that poor old Moneypenny is literally just tapping away at a keyboard in an office. Like, what's this poor woman done? And only wearing safari wear in the middle of winter. I mean, I don't know what was going on with her, but she just basically was there just to look worried now in an office, which I'm kind of hoping that I'd like to see Nomi and Moneypenny going out and doing a mission together off the side on the next Bonds, whatever happens when they reboot it. But okay. So let's talk about baddies, because I think probably we'd all agree that this might be where the stars get knocked off the review.
Yeah, this was undoubtedly the weakest element for me, which is Rami Malek as the villain, whose name I probably mispronounced, but it's like Lucifer Safin, I guess.
Almost like Lucifer, isn't it?
I mean, it is. That is, yes, exactly. A very, very sort of subtle kind of analogy. I'm surprised you picked up on that, Jane, but
I know.
It was like...
good at reading film, me. Well,
I found, to be just completely honest, I found his performance irritating. Very, very sort of pouty, very mannered accent. On top of that, I didn't find him kind of particularly threatening.
He's so bad, he likes gardening.
Yeah, I didn't find him particularly threatening. And I also felt, as much as in, you know, Spectre, obviously, they bring out this idea that Blofeld's been behind everything. And obviously, we can arguably say that didn't entirely sort of work or satisfy, but I appreciated what they were trying to do to kind of bring the Daniel Craig films sort of full circle in that way, and kind of, you know, bring that arc to an end in a way. So then just then having another villain just felt a bit like, almost, he just feels like a postscript in the sort of Daniel Craig story to me a bit, you know, like it just felt like he's just another villain with another plan.
But is even clear? For a start, could anyone really understand what he was saying a lot of the time? Because he's just mumbling away. And mumbling away about stuff like, oh, this happened, so I'm a bit peeved, so I've decided to do this. And you're like, what? Why? I don't understand him as a character at all.
Yeah, he keeps going on about like wanting to make the world a better place by like killing loads of people. But then he never says like why that would make the world a better place. Like, how does like mass death improve the situation in the world?
He didn't even have a Thanos reasoning, did he?
No, I was going to say Thanos was very clear about what he wanted and why.
I kept thinking about Thanos throughout, actually, because in some ways they've arguably got a similar sort of plan. But with Thanos, you can sort of really sort of buy into his reasoning somewhat, you know, but not so much with Safin, you know. So yeah, I did find him underwhelming.
It was just very odd because he actually starts the film as a character with a very clear motivation. Like everything that he's doing in sort of the first half of the film makes a great deal of sense given his sort of backstory that you learn. But then by the end, he's just doing things that come from nowhere, seemingly. Like, I don't get why he's doing anything that he's doing other than to give Bond something to kind of fight against for the final act. It's very strange. Like, it feels like there was either something cut or they just didn't particularly care about the villain, and they just really wanted to focus on creating a satisfying emotional journey for Craig's Bond, and the villain was just there to enable that.
He sort of is a MacGuffin in this to a different agenda, it feels like. Matthew, did you like the return of Christoph Waltz?
Yeah, I did kind of. I kind of wish, I suppose we can't be too spoilery, but I wish there'd been a bit more of him, really, as this was felt like such a direct sequel to Spectre, with so many characters returning and, you know, arcs playing out. I felt like they kind of could have given him a bit more space, really. I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of him in Spectre, but I think he was needed here. And what he did was good. And certainly in comparison to Rami Malek's villain, I left with more appreciation for him, I think. So I'm glad they brought him back. I like the henchmen. There's a couple of henchmen throughout this film. I thought they were really impressive and quite threatening as well. So, I enjoyed them a great deal.
Although one of the henchmen has a gadget that is a little bit Austin Powers.
A little bit.
There was an element of that where I was like, please stop saying, I've got a mm-mm. Oh, what's the mm-mm doing? Oh, can you crack into the mm-mm? And it's like, oh, I feel like we might have a mini me turn up in a minute or something. Mm. It was a little bit silly. But yeah, they were really threatening and they weren't faceless people, just sort of, although there were plenty, there are plenty of faceless people in this, sort of very much a throwback when we're talking about baddies, not to give too much about the lair away, but very much a throwback, right? The style, the look, what the minions are doing. Did you like that it was sort of giving a nod to the sort of the 60s?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's pure Ken Adam, isn't it? It looks like it could have been ripped from his design books, really. Like, it's really beautiful stuff. Incredible natural kind of landscapes, but architecture built into those with these huge expansive hallways made out of concrete. And yeah, it's real throwback stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. So another character returns that we haven't seen since Quantum. Felix Leiter turns up in Jamaica with an offer that Bond can't refuse. Nice to see Jeffrey Wright back.
Jeffrey Wright's literally everywhere at the moment, isn't he? As well?
He's the watcher.
He's French dispatching over here. He's bonding over there. Yeah, he's everywhere.
He's watching over there.
He's Batmaning over somewhere else.
He's cracking though, isn't he? And I love what he brings to this and the relationship that the two of them have. And, you know, you really do believe that it's not their first rodeo. They've been doing this for years. They're world weary and they have this respect for each other, but also kind of don't trust each other. He doesn't have that many scenes, but you really get a sense of history in those scenes together, don't you?
Yeah, and like Ana de Armas, he just looks like he's having fun as well. He's just really relaxed and just enjoying himself, just happy to be there. So that kind of added some lightness to the movie.
When I spoke to Jeffrey Wright for our No Time to Die feature way back in December 2019, which feels like another lifetime ago now, he was saying that like he saw the whole point of his role just to be as cool as you can possibly be. And I just felt like, I can kind of see that. Like, you're
mission
just
accomplished.
Be really cool.
Just cool. Swanning about in Jamaica with his cigars. Love it.
He's just got the best voice as well, Jeffrey.
Yeah, he
does, doesn't he? Those two actors were making Invasion, the film, when Craig was cast as Bond. And he was one of the first people to find out that he was going to be the next Bond. So he's been there since, before Craig was even Bond, basically. And you can almost feel that camaraderie on screen. Like, it really feels like they've been through the trenches together, which is quite lovely. Even though he's a very small part of this film, I felt like there was a real connection there.
He's bringing a little bit of levity and humor. Is this a little bit funnier? I mean, Phoebe Waller-Bridge was brought in to sort of polish from a feminist point of view, but also just to give it a little bit of a twinkle in the eye. Has that been achieved?
I couldn't really detect her influence, to be honest. I mean, it doesn't really feel like, you can't sort of think, that's like pure Fleabag or anything. I mean, it's more sort of Roger Moore, to be honest, some of the one-liners. I love a good dad joke, cheesy one-liner. But that element didn't really kind of come to the surface too much for me. I do think it was funny in places, and Craig delivers, the one-liners pretty well. I mean, that's kind of been built up for so long, and that did turn out to be a little bit of a disappointment.
I agree. I couldn't see her fingerprints on it, really. We don't know what it looked like before. Perhaps it was incredibly somber, and that sort of those little light touches are perhaps her work. I mean, there's one particular revelation that you're like, oh my God, is that? And there's a quip by Craig that sort of just sets that scene beautifully from a kind of being very deep to being one that's quite amusing and fun to watch. So there are moments of humour, but not very much. This is very much about pulling at the heartstrings, isn't it? I have to say, I felt like I might have a little cry. I felt the little lump in the throat happening. As you said, Jordan, partly, I think, because it's end of an era, quite definitively, but also they have managed to make this emotionally satisfying.
I would say it probably is like the most emotional Bond film, as people are saying. All I would say is it's kind of different emotion for me. Like, it's really a film that wears its heart on its sleeve. Like, it's out there to make you feel things, basically. Whereas Casino Royale, for example, which is another film that I find very emotional.
Vesper.
I feel that feels like a more kind of sophisticated emotional film. You know, I love Bond's journey from, you know, this cold-blooded killer to, as he says in the film, someone who's had his armor stripped away from him at the end of that film. Mm. Like, I find that incredibly rewarding. In this, it's more a case of Bond's kind of softened up a tiny bit. And that's really fun to watch. Like, it's really fun to see a different side of Craig's Bond. I would just say it felt like a slightly more manipulative version of emotion, but I'm not going to lie, like I had a tear running down my cheek at the end of this film. Like, it really got me there. And I would be surprised if people don't walk away from this film feeling, you know, a bit sad, a bit emotional.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. It really is. It's not delicate or nuanced, the emotional beats they're hitting here. It's very much pulling that string to get that effect. So from that point of view, you may not like it because it feels a bit obvious and a bit like various films you've seen before. I have one in my mind, which I will not say, which we discussed at the premiere, didn't we, Jordan? You know, you might feel like, I've seen this before. I understand how this works. I can see the clockwork of this machinery working. And so that, I think, could leave people cold from that point of view. But yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to have a pretty cold, black little heart to not feel something by the time the titles roll.
I found the most moving moment, I can't say, but much nearer the start, there's one sort of grace note, which I found more moving than anything, but won't say it or allude to it.
And that's a spoiler special message. Yeah.
Next week, we're going to be talking about when that person said that and did that, and when that person turned up, and when that was tucked into a waistband.
And whether or not it says James Bond will return after the credits, it may or may not say it.
We could not possibly say, but we will next week. Okay, so that's it for now. We gave it 4 stars. We're saying it's an enjoyable cinematic experience. You definitely should go and see it. But I think it'd be very interesting to see what the sort of general consensus is on the love-hate, and also where we place it. Where would you place this film in your rundown of Craig's 5? Jordan?
Well, for me, it firmly sits below Casino Royale and Skyfall, but some way above Spectre and Quantum of Solace. So it's very much a kind of mid-tier Craig-era Bond for me.
Same. Matt?
For me, I'm similar, but I would nudge it closer to Skyfall than you guys would, actually. I'd say it's fairly close to Skyfall for me. And I don't hate Spectre and Quantum of Solace as much as everyone else does.
I don't hate them either. I rewatched them all in the run-up to this film, and Quantum is a better film than I remember, and Spectre is a worse film than I remember.
Where does it sit for you, Matthew?
Number 3. Yeah, better than Spectre, but not as good as Skyfall or Casino.
A comfortable position then for Mr. Bond. Yeah. So James Bond in No Time to Die is back for one time only in cinemas from today. Go see it, but don't tell anyone the big spoilers. I do think it's one of those films that is a treat to see not knowing anything. So do yourself a favour. Don't look on the internet. Don't talk to your gobby mates. Go and see it knowing nothing. See how you feel. Before we go, reader's question that came in that is very apt. Who should the next Bond be?
Such a big question, isn't it? I would rather it's someone who I almost don't know, like, and don't expect. Like,
that isn't in the conversation.
Yeah, all the obvious choices are just a bit boring, aren't they? I like Tom Hardy, but I don't know if I want to see him as Bond. I like Idris Elba, but would he be an interesting Bond? I don't know. It just feels like he'd just be another Bond in the mold of Daniel Craig. And I'm not sure I want that. I want them to go in a different direction, do something interesting, exciting. That's a bit of a cop-out answer because I haven't actually chosen anyone. But
that's fine. You don't have to. You can say that. Matthew Leyland, what do you think?
Aquafina, because she should be.
Yeah. And she's you know, getting the skills now after Shang-Chi, you know.
Yeah.
She could be a Bond that's great with a bow and arrow.
Funny, dramatic, does action.
Yep. Great. Nice. Matt?
Yeah, I'm going to have to give a bit of a cop-out as well, I think, because the thing I find is I've really, as I said, Daniel Craig, now my fave. I've liked what he's done with it. So in a way, I feel like I don't want anyone to do anything too different or to go back to, you know, like Pierce Brosnan or whatever, you know, the later Pierce Brosnan films. But then if they make it too different, it's that weird, it's sort of that weird trap again, where it's got to actually still feel like Bond. So, you know, if you go just so wildly off piste that it just doesn't feel like Bond, that's just not going to work. But then if you, yeah, just get a sort of Tom Hardy type who is basically just doing what Craig's just done again, that's just going to feel redundant. So, I mean, I feel like they've got an extremely, extremely tough job on their hands. I mean, out of the kind of contenders that I talked about a lot, Henry Golding, I think, would be a good shout. Like, I enjoyed Snake Eyes a lot. And I think that kind of showed he had the sort of physicality for it as well. And he's also got the sort of suaveness. So I could see him bringing something and maybe taking it in that slightly suaver direction than what Craig's sort of rough around the edges Bond has been. But yeah, God, it's so tough. I could never make a decision like this. I could never. I'm so indecisive.
Goodness, you're not Barbara Broccoli.
I know, but seriously, yeah, because I'm just so indecisive. I could just never commit. I'd be like, oh, but this person's good, but oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't envy them.
I think they must. They're surely going to give it quite a break, you know, he's so definitively gone. You know, he's absolutely said he's not returning. He's not coming back. So the Craig era is definitely over.
But it's weird though, because we've had like basically 6 years between Spectre and No Time to Die. So almost any less than 6 years before the next
one, it'd be too soon.
Sort of disrespectful in the sense it's going to be closer than, you know, his last two films have been, you know, which you just feel weird.
I think then, they should go earlier, you? I think they should just like step away from the, you know, Craig's Bond has been a man coming to terms with his sort of mortality and his agingness. And, you know, he's become a little more vulnerable emotionally and physically as he's gone along. So I think I kind of like to see Bond starting out as a flashy youngster and, you know, getting his his stripes, earning his stripes.
Well, that was supposed to be the Craig era, wasn't it? That was supposed to be him starting out being fresh faced. But then, you know, by the third film, he's like over the hill. It's like we've only got like one or two films where he's actually young and capable.
It's all about the past, isn't it?
But I'm thinking even younger than Craig. You know, I don't know how old he was when
I
started.
Not
an 18-year-old, but maybe a 23-year-old and a cocky 23-year-old that thinks he knows everything.
Again, though, again, I just worry, will that feel like Bond? Kingsman, will that feel like Bond?
I know.
I'm not saying he has to be like 18 years old. I'm saying like...
Agent Cody Banks.
They could rebuild the Skyfall Lodge and we could have like all sort of, you know, like see him with a digitally de-aged Christoph Waltz in a skiing chalet.
Do you remember that James Bond Jr. cartoon as well?
Yeah.
Hey, maybe that's a rubbish idea.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Barbara Broccoli knows exactly what she's doing. She probably already has a plan. And I kind of wouldn't be surprised if Daniel Craig stays on in a sort of exec producer type way, because he's been so instrumental in the sort of movement of these films away from sort of the sexist, misogynist dinosaur days, that I wonder if he might have a hand in sort of anointing his successor.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. Yeah. I imagine he'll want a clean break, but you're right. He's been just so much more hands-on than any of his predecessors. Like, he just feels completely instrumental to the direction that these films have taken over the last however many years, 16 years.
And imagine getting a note in your audition if he's watching it and he's like, would you read it like that? And you'd be like, God, Bond doesn't like what I did with that. It would be interesting to see when they finally do make an announcement and put someone on a boat on the Thames, as they did with Daniel Craig all those years ago, looking awkward. In a ribbed boat.
There's no film news that really compares to like a new Bond, though, is there? There's just no film news apart from maybe announcing a new kind of official canon Star Wars episode. That's kind of pretty much anything that comes close, isn't it?
No casting news as big as that, and it's
been obviously so long since we've had it, isn't it, like 16 years or something. Was it 2005 he was announced officially? But if they do anything, what I would like to see, if they kind of take anything from the comic book world, what I would like them to do is not do any sort of crossovers and spin-offs and expanded universe and things, but I would like to see, almost take on the sort of multiverse idea and give people the chance to make like one-shot Bonds and sort of one-offs, and get like a sort of a director with sort of real vision come in, just do a one-off that doesn't, you know, have it's lasting impact for a series. Yeah. Yeah, like, and you can, again, perhaps give you a chance to experiment with an actor, but you're not saying, right, this person's committed for the next 10 plus years. We just give a go, see how this works. I'd like to see something like that.
Mm. Well, on that note, yes, I think we should book our tickets for our next viewing. Mm. I want to see it again, I think, because I couldn't tell what Rami Malek was saying much of the time, and I'm going to have a go on a different cinema. I wonder if it was the Albert Hall speakers, or maybe I'm getting like Bond and a little bit long in the tooth.
Same way we were.
Okay, great. Okay, so enjoy Bond if you're going to see it this weekend. And for now, we'll say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The name's Bond. James Bond.